and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi saranam gacchami, dutiyampi tatiyampi saha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam saranam gacchami, dutiyampi tatiyampi saha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham saranam gacchami, dutiyampi tatiyampi saha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Atipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion. By compassionate aspiration that harms no one. By compassionate speech that makes for clarity. By compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret. By compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. By compassionate endeavor that results in goodness. By compassionate mindfulness that proves this path. By compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself.
With this recitation,
I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, and in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy, blessed day. Oh, happy, blessed place. Oh, happy, blessed time. Oh, happy, blessed path. Oh, happy, blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma. And I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sava. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other. As the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. more important than anything. We will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Shall we look at this morning? June.
Well, I am always on a diet.
You are always on the diet.
Yeah. And I never lose weight. Ever. Ever. She told her therapist that she's been on a diet, and the therapist said, "Oh, a diet, and how much weight are you planning to get?" That's just really kind of the nail on the head.
Health is a whole lot better than
anything. Just about anything else.
Than anything else.
Yeah. And then just being really kind to this person.
Yeah.
With diet.
Yeah.
Food choices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of letting the teenager eat. About 8-year-old eat.
Yeah. Boy, it really does invite that level of attention, because so here's this whole content around being on a diet, and you know, some ego standard of losing weight, we can guess it's an ego standard, and the level of attention of making sure or being very kind to this human being, and noticing the content around health and the metabolism, and everything is a part of it, and including there's an 8-year-old and a teenager who would come, you know, who would come in and, you know, eat differently than the grown-up June would eat, keeping in mind all of these other elements that, you know, that perspective just not available to an 8-year-old.
Yeah. And an interesting little thing is making a difference in the past few days, what is it, on Sunday? And Thursday night group, the person guiding the discussion, and I don't remember the content of the discussion, but the process was someone, I think, I'll make this up, describing a part of them that was struggling with something, and the person guiding said, well, of course you're struggling. I mean, that's what you would say to that part of yourself. Of course you don't like that. Or, of course that's what you want to eat. That's what you grew up eating.
Yeah.
You know, just that. And that has broad, much broader application than just in what I eat. You know, if it's an authentic self, or an authentic sub, struggling with something that isn't healthy or isn't a good path, choice isn't a good choice, you say to them, of course you think that, of course you feel that.
Yeah, of course you would. And what is the quality of that statement? You know, what is the quality that way of being with that authentic sub, what is that quality?
Well, it's acceptance, and it's being heard. It's not being judged.
Yeah.
It's not being indulged.
Yeah.
And it's being just kinder.
Yeah. So to the 8-year-old who would love to just have a bag of potato chips with every meal, or chocolate in the morning, or whatever, of course you would. So the grown up is there, acknowledging it, accepting that perspective, and even sympathizing, we can guess, with that, but not indulging it, and not trying to change it, and not pushing it away. There's a level of, there's a quality of acceptance about that that makes all the difference, doesn't it? Being on a diet. Yeah, that sort of cuts egos off at the knees, because it's not a hard, I have a long history of diets as well, and it's just not a hard leap to see, or projection to make, that any diet has inherent in it the failure, the standards, the failure, which is what makes Anne Lamott's comment, her therapist's comment, so funny and true. Oh, how much weight do you plan to gain? Because it's built into the system. And so by removing that, the attention on that system, okay, I'll try this diet, I'll try this diet, by removing that and just putting it on presence, it's just a whole different orientation.
I'll report back.
Yeah, please. Thank you. Krista.
I just did a cleansing in the book. It's called The Colorado Cleansing. In the book, there's a sentence. I've done the cleanse a lot of times, so I've read the book a lot of times. But I took in this sentence in a way that I had never taken it in before. And the sentence is, if you eat healthy because your body can't handle sugar or wheat or dairy or whatever the thing is that your body can't handle, you're eating healthy for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so, because it, to me, I just so, it's been such a catch, because that the reason I don't eat, I want to eat those things, but I'm not going to eat those things because I want to be healthy. And so when I read it, the first few times I read it, I thought, well, he's just wrong.
Why else would you not want to eat that? Because the body can't handle it, right?
Right. Of course you want to eat those things.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up eating those things.
Uh-huh.
I like those things. And I remember when I was younger hearing that if I cut out those things, I might feel better. And I was like, well, I'll never know.
Yeah. Gee, that's a nice theory. I wish all those people well.
And so then at this stage, I read it, that sentence, and I saw just it's a whole different place. It's actually choosing help. It's choosing well-being.
Uh-huh.
It's choosing the energy of life moving through my body and not stopping it. Not having there be like dams.
Yeah. You know,
slowing it down.
But let me see if I'm with you. So, because I want to make sure I'm kind of getting what you're saying is that what the sentence was pointing at is that if I am not choosing sugar or wheat or dairy or whatever because my body can't handle it, so therefore I got to do away with it, then we're not really choosing this other way that you're laying out. That is, it's more of a defense rather than going in a direction of well-being and health and the flow of the energy through the body and all of that. Is that sort of
that's what I'm saying.
And I love that image of it's dams that get put in to kind of stop the flow with the no, right. You know, the no side of the continuum. But what you're pointing at is going for the yes to the body and the well-being and all of that.
Mm-hmm. And being now a person who's given up those things, but sometimes can still be like, I mean, I feel like the balance has shifted where there's less of, well, then I really want to have that thing when I can have it.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's way less, I don't even know. Like, what I want is health more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
But, what's that?
That's big, to have that shift of the emphasis, because now having sugar is not the treat. Being healthy is the treat.
Being healthy is such a treat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the thing that I see being on the other side, I mean, obviously not super far, but being conscious of what that health is more compelling than anything that I'm going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I was with a friend last year, and I was so aware. I mean, I have been with friends more than that. Just, it's not like once every few years I get it. but I was on a trip with him, and it was so, he eats whatever. So it was our whole day was around sugar and caffeine and flour, which is what my day used to be around.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have sugar in my coffee, but you know, we had the coffee with the sugar, and then we do something, and then we have to take a break, and he has like a treat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do something, and then we have lunch, and then he has some other kind of treat. Then we do another thing in the afternoon. There's another treat.
Mm-hmm.
It's all around the sugar and the caffeine, and I was like, wow, it really like, it like, it is, it's like its own life, like that has, like it robs us of our life.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I felt, and that's what I was raised
to,
that, you know, life is hard, and so let's have some sugar.
Yes, yes. And that's,
and it's going to make it better somehow.
Yeah, and what you're pointing to is that whole setup, it enslaves the body in the human being, because then there's a system that, okay, I can go 3 hours, but then I need the fix. Then I need can go a few more hours, and then I need the other. You know, and it really sets up the whole trap.
Right.
And robs of life.
And we don't realize it's robbing our life because it is our life and we're doing that.
Yeah.
But it totally, I mean, from the outside, that's what it looks like. But when I was in it, I mean, I didn't know my life was being robbed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was the person who said, well, I'll never know.
Yeah.
Because how would I ever not eat those things? I mean, they were my main food groups.
Yeah, yeah. But just to underline, there's two things. One is that's not true for you now, that you have transcended that.
Right, and not to sound holy, I transcended it because the choice was removed. I could feel like crap, or I could not eat them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, not to sound, you know, let's be clear.
Yeah, yeah, no, there's no holier than that, because the other point that I to align with what I'm projecting is a lot of compassion for people, for everybody that has ever struggled, which is pretty much all of us in this culture anyway, with that system, with that kind of entrapment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like it's not even acknowledged as a system of entrapment in our world.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like...
It's just the way it is.
It's just the way it is, but I had a friend who ran the bakery here in town, and she one time said, what they sell is just a few steps short of crack. And you know, when you're in the cycle, it is.
Yeah.
It's just as controlling as whatever your addiction is.
Yeah.
And so... to feel, just to get the, just to remind myself that what I mean, I don't even know if I remind myself or just always show that my biggest value is health, more than anything that I'm gonna taste.
Yeah, that's your biggest, deepest value is health, more than anything that will pass through the taste buds that you'll taste.
Because the addiction, all that stuff, it really affects, like, it looks like, it makes it seem like I am those things, but that's like saying, you know, I am a heroin addict, and the heroin is making me have these thoughts, and these foods are making me have these thoughts and believe these things about me and what's possible for life. And without that slowing things down, there's a lot of possibility in life.
Yeah, without the food, whatever kind of reactions are going on in the body because of the food, in the same way it would be with heroin or, you know, anything, without that, there's a whole world of possibilities that become available as we turn our attention there, as we get, you know, sort of get that out of our system and aren't feeding that particular structure anymore, but now are feeding health is more important to me, that process.
Yeah. And there's one more part that's really helpful for me is I'm all the time, when I eat, noticing how that food makes me feel. So is it helping me with my health, or is it slowing something down?
Yeah. Let me reflect that. All the time when you eat, you're noticing how that food makes you feel.
Yeah.
Is it helping you with your health, or is it slowing you down?
Yeah.
Boy, that's it. Yeah.
And I got a book for Christmas called The Bulletproof Diet. And the guy, he's a high-tech guy, and he hacked good health in the way you have people hack things. And what he discovered is that the research that started the low-fat, fat-free trend it was done in the 60s, but it started everything, maybe it was in the 70s, started in the 80s, I can't remember. That research was fabricated. They lied. So, but the whole fat-free, low-fat industry had taken over. And what his research has shown in his body and in his work is that we, as a species, and our brains and our bodies do better with most of 60% of our calories coming from high quality fat. So I've been experimenting with his program, and it's so wild to watch the conditioning. Because I mean it does work. Like my brain works better, and you know, I sleep better, and there's all these great thing elements, and I'm still in the experimentation process. But when I go to put the grass-fed butter in the whatever, Like, it's so strong. Now, I've been doing it since Christmas. So, what is this, like 5 months almost? Mm-hmm. Every time, the conditioning is so telling me, like, oh, you shouldn't have the ball. Like, I feel like it's so deep.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But I feel strongly, having experimented, that that the low-fat craze that we all have been, that I was so conditioned to, that keeps the addictions in place of those other foods, that keep us in that cycle of addiction rather than health and life.
Wow. Well, it's a strong case for experimenting for oneself.
Yeah.
You know, because we can guess that any two bodies are going to react differently, right? And in that same way, we can only, you know, well, anyway, to just experiment for oneself. And to see, you know, not to turn over to any expert or science or scientific, you know, anything, not to anything. What is true for this being, for this body, for this particular set of molecules and energies and karma and everything else, because this is the only thing that we are really responsible for and capable of impacting, right?
Right.
And so that to me is the thing that's just kind of screaming through what you're saying, is when we bring that level of attention to care for this body, there's just nothing better.
It's so true. It's really, to me, it feels really like practicing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
cellular level, meal by meal, bite by bite.
Right, because I can tell how I feel after I eat something.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulletproof guy, he says, look and see how you feel 2 hours after you eat.
Mm-hmm.
That'll tell you whether it worked for you or not.
That's really good.
And then there's no rules. Yeah. There's just like, it's like experiments in truth.
It's all in practice. Isn't it? I mean, yeah. I see why it's just all practice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin.
Yeah, I really appreciate the conversation around health this morning. I just sort of woke into something today that was right around the lines of what was just being discussed. Just around it. That system that was just being described, not only, you know, the food being the causing obstructions in the energy in the body and everything, mm-hmm. but it's the being controlled by something and participating in that and sort of feeling powerless.
Yeah.
That seems such a forfeiture of energy, that it the content could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be something healthy. I mean, there are people with, you know, sort of obsessive tendencies to do something that in the content of it might be healthy,
mm-hmm.
but when there's no ability to say no to it, it becomes you become a victim of that powerlessness.
Yeah. It's a process. It's one side of the duality. Because that's what content always is. It's just a duality, right? But the larger process you're pointing to is a forfeiture of any kind of response to the moment.
Mm. Yeah, and I suppose that, and then to bring it into that, to approach it from a place of duality is to then just try to establish controls over the thing. So, you know, to go on the diet or to, you know, I'm going to totally refrain from, you know, whatever it is, to sort of create a another controlling structure to combat the thing which seems to have power.
Yeah.
Rather than to just empower oneself some, which that's the tricky part. That's where I guess I you know, the ellipses take over. I'm not sure where. Someone that's just been feeling really powerless lately here. That's the word that came up in guidance recently. And I mean, I was just discussing some content, and suddenly that word was sort of reflected back as And it was just like instant, you know, tears like sort of welled up. Like I had no idea how powerless this person was feeling.
Mm. Yeah.
And even right now it's happening again, and it's just, it's wild to get in touch with that.
Yeah, the powerlessness. That there's a. Tell me if this points to the experience that there's a system of such control, and really regardless of the content, it's around this, and then there's a system of control in response to that system of control, and the one that gets overlooked and kind of squashed by that system, by those systems, is the one who feels powerless, and he's just sort of invisible. Until Absolutely. It gets reflected, and then you see it, and you have that visceral reaction and experience of that.
Yeah, and I wonder, it reminds me of a line that came up in, I think, Thursday group, that, you know, we're so conditioned to like and admire the sort of expanded mm-hmm. person mm-hmm. that we can, you know, experience as us and to totally bail on the person who suffers.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that abandoned person is even the person that's suffering. I'm not sure about that piece of it, but that person is certainly getting bailed on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And in that is suffering. I think that's where that suffering happens.
Yes.
It's not around the content.
It doesn't have anything whatsoever to do with the content, does it?
No.
It's all about not having it, about that forfeiture. That's the perfect word. It seems like that there's this life here that we've been given and entrusted with, and all of that. And when we bail on it around any content, that's the process of suffering. And so what we're training to do is to sort of just be on the watch for that, you know, that karmic pattern, so that and bringing the presence, all the presence of mind and compassion to that at the moment's notice.
Yeah, and it's tricky right now. Is the content that I'm practicing, some of the content that I'm practicing with right now is it's really calling some different level of attention to there is nothing wrong with anything, because on, you know, from sort of the obvious condition perspective, like there certainly seems to be some things wrong with the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things aren't working the way that they should, in mm-hmm. quotations, or even compared to just some optimal health, you know, the way a body, the way it would be nice for a body to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just seeing that there's somebody else involved who really you know, who wants to suffer, who wants to kind of wallow in some kind of despairing, suffering, depressed state. And it's just been really hard to tell, particularly these last couple of days, as I've been starting to feel better throughout much of the days, but then there are times that, and it's just really unclear, like, you know, is this conditioning trying to get me to go hide somewhere and suffer,
mm-hmm.
you know, or am I really, is this really the body calling for rest
mm-hmm.
and attention? And there have been times when when that suspicion has seemed supportive. It's good to bring that extra level of like questioning to what's really going on. And then there are other times where it's like, no, I think this is conditioning. And then a few minutes later, it's like I stand up and I like almost fall over. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm being too suspicious here of. And so it's just...
Yeah, and that conversation, that kind of round and round circular kind of thing can just drive a person crazy, can it? I mean, that is the suffering. You know, and so fortunately you live in an environment where it's encouraged, and you have the opportunity to always to be checking that out. To not go to the mind to, okay, is this conditioning or is this... the body or this condition, just, you know, and to be communicating about that, you know, to put it out there, to get other information. Because, again, is that first point you were talking about, that's the process of suffering. Right now, the content is around a very really real content around the health, but that same process can go on in despite any content.
Yeah.
And so we're breaking that turning to conditioned mind for the conversation process here. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah, the gifts I see in it, too quickly, is that one is that in this particular content, it requires moment by moment presence to a degree, even that doesn't really, it's not really, I can't post a note moment by moment. There's not really an ability to communicate even, you know, on sort of a bigger level, there's communication that can happen around it, but it requires my active participation on a moment-by-moment basis to just be present with it and to get to that orientation of sort of trustworthy observation of what's actually happening. And then I also just see the opportunity of calling to attention, read this conversation this morning, so some of the other responses to the whole thing, which is that those other systems of control, it's like this. It's like the person is. It's like when something so big comes up like this, then one of the ways in which that person that's powerless, it gets bailed on, is by indulging other seemingly unrelated things that this person. Traps that this person sort of falls into. It's like, well, that's not that big of a deal right now. You know, you've got this big thing going on, you know, whether it's food or, I don't know what it would be in this environment, but, you know, it's...
I know you've fallen and hurt and skinned your knees, but we can't worry about that now. We got this really big issue going on, and so just deal with it, and we'll just move on to this.
And you deserve some ice cream.
Let's go have a cookie. You'll feel better.
Right.
Yeah, here, have a cookie.
Right.
I know you skinned your knee. Here, have a cookie.
Right.
Yeah.
You've got this big health thing going on, you know, why don't you, you know, let's have some cake.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on. I mean, who doesn't like cake?
And look what he's doing.
This person.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
That's cruel.
That would be so cruel.
Anyway, just watching that happen.
And talking about it and bringing and just talking about it, bringing some attention, awareness, humor, all of that to it, you know, is good.
Yeah, it's been helpful. Thank you.
Renee.
Yeah, I really appreciated the conversation about food and health. Saw a lot there.
Yeah.
And I've been reading something also lately, and. She talks about when you go to make a change, how, and she gets rather dramatic about it, like when you're trying to, you know, do something like move out of a town, you go to a new town, you find a new house, and all the voices are screaming not to go, and then the house burns down, you know, and it's your dream house or something. So she's saying, what she's saying is all these things happen to you as soon as you start to make a change.
Uh-huh.
And that happens to me with diet.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I'll make a decision. Okay, I'm going to eat all fruits and vegetables. I'm going to give up sugar, flour, and whatever, all the things that you're not supposed to eat that, you know, that have made me feel better when I don't eat them. And then a chocolate cake will show up at my house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, I told you not to bring the cake into the house.
But there it is.
Because it is like crack. I mean,
yeah, it really is. And how can you say no? It's got to get back. Who would deny this chocolate cake is just here?
Yeah.
He's just had a hard day.
And so then either I have to move out or throw the cake out. Really? Because I'm going to eat it. And so that's a whole thing right there.
Yeah,
I know, a
whole workshop right there. You know, it's like, oh, Einstein was wrong. The universe is not friendly. And to see the whole process right there.
Yeah. Well, and this author also talks about how it gets hard at the beginning, but then it starts to get easier as you get past all of that resistance, which has been my experience with a lot of things. And so that's helpful to see all that. The other thing that was brought up that has helped me and is still helping me, because it's something I'm still working with, is having a reason to do it besides losing the weight,
yeah.
You know, or looking good or whatever mm-hmm. it is, and about, you know, how to be a athlete of awareness, mm-hmm. you know, and that you want your body to be in the best shape that it can be in your mind for practice mm-hmm. is sort of been my reason that comes in and out. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that I've been committed to it consistently by any means, but it is a reason mm-hmm. Other than just because you should or
yeah.
because you're going to be healthier or, you know.
Yeah. It really points back to that line that Krista was talking about from the Colorado Cleanse book, right? Because there's a something, we can either do it sort of as a defense, okay, I've got to lose weight or I've got to not be this. Mm-hmm. And that's just not it. What you're pointing out is, no, I want to be mm-hmm. an elite athlete. I want to, you know, show love for the body. It's sort of what, I think it's in The Key, I'm not sure which book, but about where we wash the car for the car, mm-hmm. you know. We you know, hang up the towels, you know, nice and new for the sake of the towels and mm-hmm. show them reverence and respect. And the same with the body. Oh, I don't need the chocolate cake because I really love the body. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not because I'm trying to change the body and lose this weight from the body or whatever, but no, I really love the body.
Yeah. You
know, and finding that place in ourselves, which is abundantly there.
Yeah. Yeah, and so too, because it does feel like, you know, that it's so tribal, so to speak, mm-hmm. in quotes, you know, the food and the mm-hmm. way that you're raised. And, you know, I mean, I literally, it's pretty constant for me. I mean, it's like I'd be driving down the street and the car wants to pull into the chicken barn. I mean, it's like I was raised on fried chicken.
Yeah.
And it's the hardest thing not to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't eat it, but it's like the hardest thing
but
not to
yeah,
eat.
The karma yes. just keeps rolling
yeah.
through.
Yeah. And so, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I was raised on all fried food, mm-hmm. you know, and gravy and biscuits and everybody's
I hear you.
Probably drooling. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's my projection.
No.
Raised people around here. I know that.
Yeah, and then it's like trying to figure out how to make it vegetarian, you know, which isn't healthy either. And I mean, maybe
if you fry anything long enough, it's good, right?
Maybe with this good fat thing, I can figure that out. So it's just this huge bowl, you know. It's like it was conditioned to be comfort,
yeah.
you know, and that's what we did was everybody got together and made fried chicken or
yep.
went to Kentucky Fried Chicken when it used to be good.
Yep.
And then, and you know, did all these things that were all about food, mm-hmm. you know, and it is one of, I mean, I think if, you know, it's like one of those huge things I could spend my life and I would be fully awake and aware if I overcame all that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what you're pointing to is what we're up against with
yeah,
food.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like, it's huge karmic in, you know, it's huge. And so the whole, if we just worked with nothing but that, you know, yeah. that would be the workshop that would last our whole lives, right?
Yeah.
Because exactly. It's so deep and it's so, but first chakra, you know,
yeah.
and tribal. And yet it kind of gets back to what we were just talking about, that the level of attention that's required to come, you know, to go up against that big karma. It's just such a gift in that, you know, in
yes.
that sort of
yeah.
mixed blessing sort of way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we can't go to sleep, even for a moment, or that blinker will be on and I'll be in the drive-thru window at chicken barn. You know, it's like, I just can't do it. You know, I can't go to sleep. It's
yeah.
everywhere. I'll be, you know,
yeah.
there's sugar everywhere. There's
it is.
Everywhere.
It's on every corner.
It's on every corner.
Yeah.
It's in every... It's every teller at the bank, is everywhere.
It's
you
legal.
Pop, a,
yeah.
pop mints
yeah.
in your mouth and your next thing, yeah, it's legal.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. And so it really is that worthy opponent kind of place where...
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you need like a team of people to be with you all the time, which we have.
Which we have. Yeah. Not only Sangha, but internally, yeah. the mentor and all of the support.
Yeah, so I'm appreciative of attacking that topic and looking at it. And I had green juice this morning with protein. Yeah, so who knows what will happen later.
But in 2 hours later, you're feeling good, right? You know the body.
There's a clear difference, especially as the body ages.
Well, and that's good to say and acknowledge and remember and record. Uh-huh. Okay, it's 10 o'clock. I had 2 hours after a really healthy breakfast, and I'm feeling great. Just want to make a note of that. Feeling great. Uh-huh. Note to self, feel great. Yeah. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
And when we slip and eat the sugar, feeling crappy. Got it. Remember 2 hours ago when we ate that candy bar? Now I'm feeling crappy.
Yeah.
And just to really give ourselves all kinds of that data, that's real data that you can know because you're experiencing it.
Yeah, and that brings up the Colorado cleanse when I did it. I mean, that was like, I could have climbed Mount Everest.
Yes.
I mean, maybe not, but
the change was huge.
Half Dome would be a better example. But, it's like, it was like the hardest thing I ever did.
I know.
I woke up in the middle of the night, just freaked out. And there was all kinds of things going on.
Yeah.
And so, I should maybe do that again.
Well, I'm not just
a team of people.
Because I was part of that group that did it with you. And that call recording cycled through not too long ago.
Yeah.
We all felt really good.
I heard your voice, I was so aware and felt them after I got through that initial detox part. I was great. It was awareness was like on overload. I was the elite athlete running the marathon or something. Yeah.
So again, just reminding ourselves of that.
Yeah.
The payoff.
Yeah. But I have to do it in a group because I tried to do it by myself.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like 3 days and I was like.
Yeah. Well, that means.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It'd be a note to the guest master. Hey, is it time for a
group?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Thank you. Jen?
Really appreciate the discussion. I was going back to the first discussion around the diet and just seeing how, we talk sometimes about the cycle of suffering that, stress, then we cope. Mm-hmm. And then we feel better for a minute because we've coped, and then we feel worse. And I always look at that place. It's such an interesting place to me in that it feels like in that, quote, feeling worse, that in my experience, there's a moment of coming to in there, waking up, and realizing, oh, wait a minute. That actually did, it's after the chocolate cake or the after the whatever. That actually didn't feel good. And what it feels like is that there's so much possibility in that moment, but what we're conditioned to do is feel bad, which leads up to the quote diet, which is deciding I'm going to be perfect.
Yeah,
I'm not going to do that anymore. And that in that place of just, it's why it's so brilliant. Instead of going on a diet, I'm going to stay present.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like staying in the awareness instead of going to conditioning's version of the awareness is to take it back into content.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the diet is the content.
Yeah.
And then we're sunk.
Yes.
Because we're completely disconnected from the place that came from.
Yeah.
And now we only have an idea of it. And we're disconnected from the experience of it. And when we're basically up in our heads with conditioned mind. And now all we have is called willpower, which is designed to fail.
Yeah. Wow, that's really, let me see if I can reflect some of that back. So when we go to that sort of wake up place of feeling better, feeling worse in the battering cycle, the temptation is to go right back into the feeling bad, which scoops us back up around into the decision to be perfect, which is the land of content.
Yeah, it's how conditioning takes a process insight and turns it back into content.
Yes. And in that, so when conditioning is successful in taking that process place and turning it back into content, all we have available to us is just sheer willpower, or you know, read more books or whatever, you know,
being
content.
The right person.
Yeah.
Which is all stress.
Yeah, which is, yes.
Designed to bring you right back around to the behavior that you're supposedly attempting not to do.
Yes, it's the stress building mechanism. Willpower, self-help, all of those kinds of things, which swings us right back around to the coping behavior.
You know, as people have been talking, I keep thinking of this thing that it's so perfect. I'm sure this is true being a parent, which I've not been, but it certainly is true having the care of a creature. So Sadie's got a thing on her paw, and it's not terrible, you know, but it's not healing because she's licking it.
Oh.
Not a lot, but enough that it will not heal. Mm-hmm. So it's so interesting, the process that goes on around it, because what needs to happen is she needs to stop licking it. And she's a dog, and what dogs do is they lick it. You know, so I want her to stop licking it, because I don't want her to have to wear that stupid collar, you know. But she's a dog, so she doesn't stop licking it, you know. So I had this talk with her this morning as I put the thing on her head again, because what happens is that it's the funniest thing. Oh my God, she won't lick it when I'm near her.
Yeah,
like. Overnight for 12 hours, I'm sound asleep, she won't lick it. But the minute she's by herself and I'm off doing something else, bam, she'll do it. So I keep doing the hope method. So it gets better. And then this morning, 10 minutes, I'm like, oh, she's going to eat her breakfast. She'll be alone for 5 minutes. I'm going to do this one thing. Came back, she licked it. So I was like, okay, got it.
Yeah.
And I was up, she's on my porch, and I put the bonnet on her, and she just looked at me. You know? And I just walked up to her, and I was like, you're a dog. You lick. You know? And that's all right. And this stinks. You know, it's the equivalent of who could blame you? You know?
Yeah.
I hate this collar, too. But here's the deal. The only other option is way worse. We're going to have to go to that stupid hospital that you hate, and they're going to do something that really is overkill, and you're going to have to wear this thing for twice as long, you know? So we had this whole thing, and the funniest part was she still just looked at me. And it was like, okay, that's all right. It's okay, you know? She doesn't even have to like it or feel differently about it, and nor do I.
Yeah.
But it is how it is.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at that with... I always look at it with the focus of attention. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same thing internally, you know? It's like the attention goes. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
It's just how it is. But I can keep it here.
Yeah.
I can keep it here. No matter how much whatever's here, quote, doesn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah. And no, there doesn't need to be a different reaction. You don't need to put on a smiley face. You don't need to be anything other than the way it is right now, with the way it is right now.
And I guess the biggest piece is, like, she's a dog. She's going to lick it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, sure, we'll talk about that thing of expecting, you know, your dog is so, you have such, it's an amazing dog, you know, such, so smart and so, you know, that you expect that it can, you know, sing the national anthem,
yeah.
Right? It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's like, I look at her and there's this, it's so funny, it's like, this dog is so smart and so plugged in and so, but she's still a dog.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
She's still a dog.
Yeah.
And it's like, I do the same thing with Jen.
Yeah.
Like, she's so good and so sincere and so... But she's still a conditioned human.
Yes.
That's not going to change.
Yeah.
You know? That's, it's like, she's so good. I mean, this is never said, of course, but so we can just go to sleep.
Yeah.
Because it'll all just take care of itself.
Yeah.
No, it won't.
Yeah.
No, it won't. Because I don't know how to say it, but those parallel tracks are always there. Mm-hmm. You know, she's always going to lick the thing. That's always the way it's going to end up.
Yeah, and so...
there's that place where what you're doing with the collar and the talks and the everything matters so much. Mm-hmm. She's a dog. She would lick it, and the course of events would happen. She's so good. Mm-hmm. You know, all of that is a package.
So smart.
Yes, and she is, and she's and precious in every way. Mm-hmm. And there's a way that here in this world, mm-hmm. this human being is interacting with this good dog. This good human being and this good dog interacting in this really this situation, and it is all profoundly okay.
Yes. And it doesn't mean we don't need the collar.
Right. That's my point.
Yeah, exactly. And because there is, you're right. Because it's like, if I practice right and I'm the right person, then everything's going to go my way and I won't ever have to use those stupid plastic collars. Right. You know, metaphorically or literally.
Which brings in bringing back to this, the human being. So we are all conditioned human beings and we're all perfect enlightenment. Mm-hmm. That's what we are. Mm-hmm. And we are in this plane of existence mm-hmm. where we are both.
Where we want to eat sugar and we're conditioned to whatever.
And we forget things and we step on people's toes and we mess up mm-hmm. and we do all of these unskillful mm-hmm. things and we have the proverbial collars mm-hmm. to help us, right? We have the structures, we have whatever we need mm-hmm. in order to help us. We don't have to feel happy about it. Mm-hmm. We don't have to feel anything about it.
Right.
It's just what is. Mm-hmm. And so it brings to mind Ram Dass's thing that life is just so challenging, so difficult. The only way to go through it is holding hands.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where sort of like all roads lead there.
Yeah, and it's, as you say that, it's the kindness of practice, that holding hands. Because,
yeah.
you know, it can get confused with, oh, you know, you've got this health thing going on, have a cookie.
Yeah.
Let's hold hands. Yeah. That's how we've been conditioned to hold hands. You know, I mean, I've seen it. God, I'll never forget when my niece was like 4 years old and, you know, upset about something. You know, I get her in her mom's lap and her mom, you know, hands her chocolate chip cookies. I'm like, oh God, this is not going to go well. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, there it is.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's how it happens.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's what we confuse with that holding hands. But the holding hands is, I hate it, but we got to put this collar on you.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate it. I love you. Mm-hmm. Come here, let's put your collar on.
Yeah, it stinks.
Yeah.
It stinks, but it's going to be the best thing for all of us. And,
yeah, it's not that place of, you know, indulging. Mm-hmm. And it's not that place of, oh, Sadie, come here, I've got to put this collar on you. It's not that either.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's that middle way of empathy and compassion mm-hmm. and kind of that tough love, I guess. No, I hate that expression, but you know what I mean. That I'm just going to do what needs to be done.
Yeah, well, it's the ability, in another context, that thing we keep talking about, it's the ability to keep doing the little things that matter.
Yeah.
You know, even when I'm identified with that which doesn't want to do them.
Yeah.
But we keep doing them.
Yeah.
You know, we show up to sit, even when I'm identified with, why would I sit, you know, and look at a blank wall? What's that going to do?
Yeah.
But I still sit.
Yeah.
You know, we still hold those structures for ourselves.
Yeah. In whatever attitude of mind we bring to it in that moment.
Yeah.
I could have.
So thankful for the plastic collar.
Uh-huh.
That I experience is like all these different structures.
Yes.
That, you know?
Yeah.
Like monastic practice and then all the different structures out in the world.
Uh-huh.
Zen awareness coaching and then
uh-huh.
and just regular sitting and checking in. It's huge.
I know.
And it is, I love that line earlier, someone said, experiments in truth.
Uh-huh.
That really feels like it's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right? Experiments in truth.
Yeah. And that's the kind of antidote to that self-hating, you know, battering cycle kind of thing. Of, you know, I do it, I feel bad, then I'm going to be perfect. And, you know, kind of keeps the stress pills, the whole thing.
Yeah.
The thing that kind of pulls one of the legs out of that kind of table, makes the whole thing fall over, is that unconditionally accepting attitude of loving observation,
mm-hmm.
just paying attention. Mm-hmm. Like, what actually happens
mm-hmm.
when I eat the cake?
Mm-hmm.
What actually happens when whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And what actually happens when I wear the plastic collar? Mm-hmm. I feel amazing. Mm-hmm. It's like my life completely transforms. Things work. It's like, wow. And suddenly I'm so grateful for this thing that I hated. Uh-huh. You know, that I really didn't want to do. That's powerful.
Yeah. So the thing that pulls the leg out from under the condition, the battering cycle, is compassionate, sort of, you didn't say this, but kind of this unrelenting paying attention. Mm-hmm. What is actually happening? Mm-hmm. Gosh. And in that way, it circumvents how I'm feeling, what I think about this, what conditioned mind's telling me about it. It's just, no, I'm just paying attention to what is actually so.
Yeah, it completely undoes that system. It's like that's the magic, that's the linchpin. And that's the formula I've used, the kind of loving, compassionate awareness practice formula I've used to dissolve several huge life-stealing addictions.
Yeah.
And I know I talk about that about every other time I'm in group, but I still can't believe that that's happened. It's it's amazing. I never thought in my whole life I would be able to let go of that stuff. And that was the key. It was that not going into self-hate. Uh-huh. You know, it was the staying with that. At first, just staying with that, I'm actually not going to try to change the behavior. Uh-huh. I might even do more of it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to pay really, intense attention to it. You know, I'm going to see everything there is to see.
That is so important. Because if you had addressed it on the content level from the get-go, it's the diet. You know, mm-hmm. you'd have been doomed to
say,
how much are you planning to increase this addiction in your life then, right? You're doing it that way. But you didn't take it from that approach. You went straight for the process. Mm-hmm. You went straight for the process. No, I'm not going to worry about the content. I'm not going to worry about letting it go, stopping doing it, cutting back, rationing my whatever. None of that. I'm going to pay attention. And in paying attention to the process, the content just can't get a foothold in, after a while. I mean, it came for a while. And like you say, sometimes it even increases, it escalates, or the chocolate cake drops in your house or whatever, but it does seem like it sometimes kind of rears up. But by staying the course in that way, it just can't hold up.
Yeah. Well, and I get to see everything there is to see about it.
Uh-huh.
I get to see everything about how it works. I see how I see all the, pay attention to every little detail, all the ways I'm told I'm going to feel before, uh-huh. and I'm recording all of that.
Uh-huh.
And then I do it. And then I feel whatever I feel, and I'm recording that.
Uh-huh.
And then all the catastrophic results afterwards, and I'm recording that.
Uh-huh.
And again, gather enough evidence, and it's like, huh, I'm very, very, very clear on how all this works.
Yeah.
At that point, it just falls away effortlessly.
Yeah. The clarity is what, when you're very, very, very clear on how it works, it all just falls away.
Because I want
effortlessly.
To, yeah, because I want to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do what makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And I feel so blessed right now to be able to be here now, having kind of unplugged a handful of these major, life sucking kind of hoses, to get down to these much more subtle layers. That are very powerful things like food. You know, it was like when I was in my early 20s, oh my gosh, it was like I had so many other things going that food was like
that's the least of my worries.
Yeah, it's just not even an issue. I'm on this crazy roller coaster with I don't even know, cigarettes and alcohol, drugs and alcohol, caffeine, all it's like meow.
And food? I can't worry about food. Right now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And but over time, kind of going systematically from the most gross forms of suffering down to the more subtle. So thankful to be here and to see actually oh my gosh, food makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's so huge. When in my early 20s, and all through my life, I've had this incredible, strong, healthy body, just amazing, can do all this stuff. And I would just, I was always so active and so athletic and so physical. It was I could do anything. I could eat anything. I could do anything to the body.
It could take it all.
And it could take it.
Mm-hmm. It's apparently.
It seemed like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the time.
In the 20s.
Yeah, it was, exactly. I mean, it was crazy. But...
it was like in the 20s. Yeah.
Right. I mean, if I tried one day of that now, I'd probably be in the hospital. I don't even know. But that was like, that was the plan. Uh-huh. You know? And like, well, if the body starts feeling bad, I'll just work out harder. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, that worked for like 3 decades. Mm-hmm. And then it stopped working, you know, as well. And there were injuries, mm-hmm. and I couldn't work as hard. And then the metabolism changed. I'm not able to kind of keep up, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And it kind of wasn't until getting here and practicing with the visiting home thing and seeing like, oh, like, I actually didn't think that it was possible to lose weight. So there was this one program that I was involved in that had a weight limit, and I thought, like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to meet this weight. I'll have to cut off, like, a foot. Like, it's not actually possible to do it. Uh-huh. I haven't weighed that much since I was 13, uh-huh. you know? Like, but I found here, like, those pounds, those 30 pounds or whatever, just disappeared. Uh-huh. And it didn't happen the way I was conditioned to believe it was going to happen. Yeah. I didn't work out, or actually worked out a lot less. Uh-huh. I let go of those really high-impact physical activities. The diet really changed. Uh-huh. And then I supported the body with, like, yoga and uh-huh. stuff like that. And I'm suddenly like, healthier and lighter than I've ever been in my life. And... you know, and the boys and women take it and turn it into content. Like, I realized, like, it really is. I thought it was 90% exercise, 10% diet. But I'm seeing it's like, you know, for this body anyway, 80, 90% diet, nutrition, and 10 or 20% exercise. And that's just wild to see. And that's all been kind of this part of this experiment of truth. The boys would want to take that and turn it into a program.
Yeah. Yep.
But what I'm seeing is that it's just the process of presence that got me there. It's the process of paying attention. It's the process of the willingness to submit to a structure that will support me feeling as good as I can possibly feel.
Exactly. And not only the structure that supports you in feeling good, even better and better and better as we get down into more and more subtle areas, as you're describing, your whole perspective was turned on its head, you know, how things work. And so as those you know, life sucking you know, attachments get pulled out, and life is just so kind this way, isn't it?
Yeah.
That it just takes us into more and more subtle experiments in truth.
Yeah, so gentle.
The level of happiness is
It just keeps going up and up, and it's so wild. I never ever would have guessed that bliss is what's on the other side of compassion and self-discipline.
Yeah.
Never would have guessed that.
But you prove it to yourself.
Oh, daily here.
Thank you. Thank you all.